So today, the overall kind of trend is Trump is moving away from NATO, right? Do you think it's I'm thinking maybe it's a good idea this is happening. If Trump moves away from NATO, it will force Europe to basically be more together because they can't rely on China. Obviously, cause it's on the other side and they have massive disagreements. But there will never be like a big divide between America and the EU in that kind of aspect. So if Trump goes really hard on kind of separating those kind of states, in the meantime, the EU will have to kind of forced to be into this situation where they have to actually look at this in a different way. And I think that's actually happening in Europe right now. Like him threatening today to not supply Ukraine with any more munitions and stuff like that through Europe unless they send boats to the Hormuz. I think them declining that is a pretty big statement, especially the UK. It's not coming out today and just saying we're not getting involved at all. What do you think? Because I would say you would say no.
No, I mean, I think there's some truth to that. Like, if you get the shit beat out of you a ton in grade school, maybe you can learn self-defense. And if someone tries to murder you in the future, you know, you're ready to fight for yourself. Even if they, like, cut your eye out or something as a kid, you know, you still got one.
Wait, see, sorry, but are you joking? Or, like, being sarcastic?
Yeah, the problem I have with these types of analyses is you guys, what you're doing is you're trying to say that maybe this is a good thing, but what you're looking at is called a silver lining. When a silver lining is there is a shit scenario, but maybe there's, like, a kind of a silver lining to how it turns out. Like, is it good that Europe might be more united in the future because of how obstinate and crazy America's being now? Yeah, sure. But, like, we could have gone to that exact same place without America torching its relationship with the rest of the world. And we could have done it together in a more powerful and cohesive way. Yes, we could have. Yeah,
I don't think Europe would ever have gone to that point. We're like diametrically different from America and the way that we kind of view the world, and we're really disintegrated in the way that we join
because
each other.
Been, like, there's been no will for it, right? It's either been people who are positive with US.
But do you think America would be able to create that normally? I mean, they tried for like 70 years and it never worked. Like, since World War II, like, after NATO was created, and then I guess the Berlin Wall like went down. After that, it's basically just been the same thing. Like, Europe hasn't been coming together more, I don't think. Like, I would say we were most united in World War II, like beyond anything else, obviously. But like,
you know,
before
hasn't
that,
Europe been relatively free of conflict for the past, I don't know, for the past
course,
like
yeah.
80 years? Like, I feel like that's a decent achievement. All of Europe came together, more or less, didn't basically all of Europe support
but
the
you would say
Serbia stuff? More like Europe came together for NATO missions against Libya and Iraq? Like,
wouldn't you agree that's mostly because Russia was going after like the like Uzbekistan and stuff like that and like Afghanistan? Like, they were more focused on the Middle East or the Asia kind of continent than they were the Europe continent.
Maybe, but who
Georgia
cares? I mean,
one.
In the past, that unity wouldn't have been there at all, right? It would have just been like, oh, well, you know, now we have to take sides. But now it's not a question of like which European countries are going to side with Russia and which are going to side with the United States. I think it's like kind of just taken for granted now that everybody kind of in the West is on the same side. No? Like, that's a good thing, no? Or it was a good thing.
I think the way you're coming at it is like maybe we're talking past each other here. Like, my angle is that I agree that Europe is like on the same side, sort of, but I don't agree that America would necessarily be able to force or push Europe into a more a centralized kind of state. And I do not believe the European Union is actually strong at all in terms of like that kind of pull. And this has happened. Like, we've seen before this kind of shit with like Trump's second term, the general trend for like European sentiment was actually getting worse. But now it's getting better. Like, it's actually on both sides, right and the left. And that was not the same before. People were actually getting more annoyed with Europe, even after Brexit. Like, there were the southern European states, Balkans and stuff like that. Like, I just can't foresee a scenario where America can, obviously a war could happen, like a world war and stuff like that. But that's the same thing as what's happening now, right? Is you're arguing for something really bad to happen to push everyone together. But does it actually change the kind of our opinions? Like, if America is changing our opinions, is that the same as us having to consult ourselves? Like, we're having to actually look at ourselves and introspect right now when we haven't had to do that before. It's always been America.
Yeah, but I don't know, is Europe actually introspecting right now and looking at itself, or is Europe just having an incredibly negative reaction to what the United States is doing? And if we continue to move in this direction and we're all kind of like past the US being fucking crazy, and then Europe has to actually sit down and figure out the brass tacks of who's going to be the leader of Europe, is that going to be a decision that European countries are going to come together on and agree with?
I think so, yes. I think that's actually happening right now. I think it's pretty disjointed because we're still in the phase of, like, after the tariffs especially, like, the phase where we wanted to believe that America wouldn't keep doing stuff like that. But I think the Iran war has created shit into oblivion. Like, I think it's the final coffin in, like, nail in the coffin. Like, there is there's polling right now where, like, Americans or Europeans view America as, like, one of the highest threats to Europe as a whole. Along with like Russia, they're not anywhere near Russia now, but they're up there, like, to that point. And I think it's one of the things that's like Spain, for example. Spain, like, there's like a divide, like, you know this, right? Like, there's a divide in Europe. There's like, you've got the southern kind of states in the bottom right, and then you've got the southern states, like, the bottom, and then you've got the kind of Spain on its own, and then you've got the big boys where like France, Germany, and UK, and then you've got the Nordic countries. And one thing that I've seen, at least, maybe some people disagree, is that the southern parts and the northern parts are joining. They're coming together, they're aligning more. And that's like, that's not something I would have ever expected to see in like my lifetime. Like, that's just something I've always known as, like, at least from my point of view, from speaking to other people, we've never really agreed on a lot of things, but like, yeah.
Okay. I mean, I guess we'll see what happens. That's, I just don't know if I feel like Europe as a continent is going to come together under a single country. Under Germany or France, and everybody's going to be
happy. Oh, no, I don't think that, no.
And I think that I think there's a lot of unity because there's the perception of, like, this threat of the United States. But once the U.S. is gone and that fades away, like, you're still going to be left with the weird kind of immigration problems that Europe deals with, the incredibly different economies that are still, like, members of the Eurozone. You know, the fact that the UK is not there, you've got external friends and foes, like Russia's energy policies are going to have different impacts on different countries in the EU, you know, who China wants to be friends with. Like, these are all weird issues that I think, like, what's going to happen? Like, I just don't know the answer to this, but like, if China makes a big pass at the United Kingdom or the European Union, like, you know, is Europe unified in terms of their opinions on China? Like, is the approach to forming trade alliances or, you know, there are trade unions or something with China, is that going to be a thing that everybody can come together very quickly and easily on? Or I don't know. My vibe, my inclination is that no, these are going to be massive internal turmoil fight things, but I mean, who knows?
Maybe I'm wrong on this because the period is a bit fuzzier for me, but like, this feels like a lot like the America as they came together, right? Like, you had a lot of differences between the South and the North, but like, you also had a lot of commonalities, but you had to have like a conflict kind of bring them together. It was between them, right? It wasn't an external source, but mm-hmm. There was other points in the time where you also had that, right? Like, I'm pretty sure World War II was a big defining factor. World War I and World War II were a big defining factors for America in how they worked together as states, and the periods before. Like, most of the time, I maybe I'm wrong for history, but I would assume pretty much all big coalitions were built through conflict, like conflict within itself or external, and the ones that weren't are usually much more flimsy.
Yeah, but I mean, conflict also destroys things as well, right? Like, Yugoslavia was destroyed as a country. The Soviet Union eventually fell. The Warsaw Pact dissolved, you know, after all the conflicts, you know, through the Cold War and everything else. You had, you know, the United States' formation was the dissolution of the colonies and their relationship with the king. So, I mean, like, conflict can also destroy things, too, you know?
It definitely can, yeah.
So, I mean, I guess we'll see what happens.
For the China thing, though, I think that's interesting. That's a good point. But, like, one thing that I think is definitely universally agreed on is that through the last, like, 15 years, China has stole lots of manufacturing from Europe, from basically every single country. And that is an incredibly high, like, opinion for a lot of older people in Europe, mm-hmm. especially from Germany and stuff like that. They favor China right now over America. I don't think that would be the same in, like, you know, if, like, a Democratic president come around. I'm not someone that thinks like that, but, like, it's definitely high now. But I don't think there's going to be... I definitely think there is a unified... Like, right now, there's tariffs on EVs pretty much across the board from China. There's also tariffs on manufacturing, like, equipment and tools for, like, cars and stuff like that. Like, we are taking a higher kind of stance against that, finally. It's been a long time since we've done it. And because people are starting to realize that China has a very, very predatory approach, but we haven't really kind of done anything about it for a while because they've been focusing more on Asia and stuff like that, right? And America. But now they're coming after Europe's kind of manufacturing base, petrochemicals and stuff. So I do think that we have a more of a unified approach to stuff. It's definitely not anywhere near like America. I'm not trying to say that we'll come like, you know, the United, you know, States of Europe. Mm-hmm. But I think that there is a much higher chance right now of like in the next few years, especially as Trump's, you know, the leader, that we make, if he, for example, if he pulls out all the troops, like he can't dissolve NATO. He can't do that without Congress, right? But he could potentially... Well, yeah, he could do it, but, you know,
he could do it in effect, right? Like, if Trump says, I'm no longer going to support NATO, we're not honoring any of our...
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, yeah. I was just hedging. He can't do it, like, legally. But he can, for example, pull out all the troops, all of the nukes and stuff like that from EU. And I don't think that would be unrealistic at this point. Like, I really don't. I think he genuinely hates NATO for not helping him. And it's, like, a huge ego problem for him. Mm-hmm. Maybe it won't. Maybe I'm, like, too in the moment. But, like, if that would happen, I think it would... If that were to happen, I don't think the response would be, oh, we'll just wait 2 years. I think that would... This is the point now where, like... The Europeans are like genuinely coming together and feeling like we need to create a coalition. And I think there could be a period where you have like the big players in Europe, like America, you know, UK, Germany and France and Spain, like make their own kind of thing. Because there is a, you know, you say Brexit and stuff like that, but like there has been a big change between now and 10 years ago. Like most people in England think that we shouldn't have done what we did. And there's like a genuine kind of want for like more of the European policies. I mean, I think Keir Starmer came out the other day and his admin think they're going to get in like 60 of like European policies back. So there's like a slow reunification. People obviously like they're awkward over it because it happened and you can't really like go back like instantly or anything like that. And I don't think we'll ever come back to the European Union. But I think defense wise, it's definitely a possibility.
Okay.
Yeah. A higher possibility.
I mean, I guess we'll see what happens.
Okay.
And so I'm not, hey everyone, so I'm not going to be able to watch the president's address tonight, but here's the thing. He brought America into a war the people do not want. He has put American troops in harm's way. Costs are rising by the day. And meanwhile, he has done nothing to address the needs of the people of America. And I bet you he's going to try and claim victory tonight. But the reality is we're watching what he does.
Excuse me. Why would she do this? Why would she do this? What if Trump was planning on claiming victory tonight and having us pull out? And now he fucking listens to her saying this shit. What if Trump's like, well, you know what? Fuck that. I am staying for another 6 months. You know what? Fuck this bitch. I'm not leaving. I'm here to fucking stay.
Instead of listening to what he says.
Look at that straight line he's walking. Perfectly straight.
Joe Biden did this. Don't forget.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
My fellow Americans, good evening. Let me begin by congratulating the team at NASA and our brave astronauts on the successful launch of Artemis II. It was quite something. It will be traveling further than any manned rocket has ever flown and will very substantially pass the moon, go around it, and come back home from a distance that has never been done before. It's amazing. They are on the way, and God bless them. These are brave people. We want to God bless those four unbelievable astronauts. As we speak this evening, it's been just 1 month since the United States military began Operation Epic Fury.
Epic Fury.
Targeting the world's number one state sponsor of terror, Iran. In these past 4 weeks, our armed forces have delivered swift, decisive, overwhelming victories on the battlefield. Victories like few people have ever seen before. Tonight, Iran's Navy is gone. Their air force is in ruins.
Oh, shit.
Their leaders, most of them, terrorist regime they led, are now dead.
He's their losing it.
Command and control of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps is being decimated as we speak. Their ability to launch missiles and drones is dramatically curtailed, and their weapons, factories, and rocket launchers are being blown to pieces. Very few of them left. Never in the history of warfare has an enemy suffered such clear and devastating large-scale losses in a matter of weeks. Our enemies are losing, and America, as it has been for 5 years under my presidency, is winning, and now winning bigger than ever before. Before discussing this current situation, I also want to thank our troops for the masterful job they did in taking the country of Venezuela in a matter of minutes. That hit was quick, lethal, violent, and respected by everyone all over the world. After rebuilding our military during my first term, we have by far the strongest military anywhere in the world. And now we're working along with Venezuela and are in a true sense joint venture partners. We're getting along incredibly well in the production and sale of massive amounts of oil and gas. The second largest reserves on Earth after the United States of America. We're now totally independent of the Middle East, and yet we are there to help. We don't have to be there. We don't need their oil. We don't need anything they have, but we're there to help our allies. Tonight, I want to provide an update on the tremendous progress our warriors have made in Iran and discuss why Operation Epic Fury is necessary for the safety of America and the security of the free world. From the very first day I announced my campaign for president in 2015, I have vowed that I would never allow Iran to have a nuclear weapon. This fanatical regime has been chanting death to America, death to Israel.
Oh, man, are we leaving or not?
47 years. Their proxies were behind the murder of 241 Americans in the Marine barracks bombing in Beirut, the slaughter of hundreds of our service members with roadside bombs. They were involved in the attack on the USS Cole, and they carried out the countless other heinous acts, including the just horrible, bloody atrocities of October 7th in Israel, something that most people have never seen anything like it. This murderous regime also recently killed 45,000 of their own people who were protesting in Iran, 45,000 dead. For these terrorists to have nuclear weapons would be an intolerable threat. The most violent and thuggish regime on earth would be free to carry out their campaigns of terror, coercion, conquest, and mass murder from behind a nuclear shield. I will never let that happen, and neither should any of our past presidents. This situation has been going on for 47 years and should have been handled long before I arrived in office. I did many things during my two terms in office to stop the quest for nuclear weapons by Iran first. And perhaps most importantly, I killed General Qasem Soleimani in my first term. He was an evil genius, brilliant person, a horrible human being, however, the father of the roadside bomb. And he lived just horrible, what he did. Iran would have been perhaps in far better, stronger position. Had he lived, we would have had probably a different conversation tonight. But you know what? We'd still be winning and winning big. And then, very importantly, I terminated Barack Hussein Obama's Iran nuclear deal, a disaster. Obama gave them $1.7 billion in cash, green cash, took it out of banks from Virginia, D.C., and Maryland, all the cash they had. He flew it by airplanes in an attempt to buy their respect and loyalty, but it didn't work. They laughed at our president and went on with their mission to have a nuclear bomb. His Iran deal would have led to a colossal arsenal of massive nuclear weapons for Iran, and they would have had them years ago, and they would have used them. It would have been a different world. There would have been no Middle East and no Israel right now, in my opinion, the opinion of a lot of great experts, had I not terminated that terrible deal. And I was so honored to do it. I was so proud to do it. It was so bad right from the beginning. Essentially, I did what no other president was willing to do. They made mistakes, and I am correcting them. My first preference was always the path of diplomacy, yet the regime continued their relentless quest for nuclear weapons and rejected every attempt at an agreement. For this reason, in June, I ordered a strike on Iran's key nuclear facilities in Operation Midnight Hammer. Nobody's ever seen anything like it. Those beautiful B-2 bombers performed magnificently. We totally obliterated those nuclear sites. The regime then sought to rebuild their nuclear program at a totally different location, making clear they had no intention of abandoning their pursuit of nuclear weapons. They were also rapidly building a vast stockpile of conventional ballistic missiles and would soon have had missiles that could reach the American homeland, Europe, and virtually any other place on Earth. Iran's strategy was so obvious. They wanted to produce as many missiles as possible, and they did, with the longest range possible. And they had some weapons that nobody believed they had. We just learned that out. We took them out. We took them all out so that no one would really dare stop them. And their race for a nuclear bomb, a nuclear weapon like nobody's ever seen before, they were right at the doorstep.
For years, everyone has said that Iran cannot have nuclear weapons. But in the end, those are just words if you're not willing to take action when the time comes. As I stated in my announcement of Operation Epic Fury, our objectives are very simple and clear. We are systematically dismantling the regime's ability to threaten America or project power outside of their borders. That means eliminating Iran's navy, which is now absolutely destroyed, hurting their air force and their missile program at levels never seen before, and annihilating their defense industrial base. We've done all of it. Their navy is gone. Their air force is gone. Their missiles are just about used up or beaten. Taken together, these actions will cripple Iran military, crush their ability to support terrorist proxies, and deny them the ability to build a nuclear bomb. Our armed forces have been extraordinary. There's never been anything like it militarily. Everyone is talking about it, and tonight I'm pleased to say that these core strategic objectives are nearing completion. As we celebrate this progress, we think especially of the 13 American warriors who have laid down their lives in this fight to prevent our children from ever having to face a nuclear Iran. Twice this past month, I have traveled to Dover Air Force Base, and it's been something. I wanted to be with those heroes as they return to American soil, and I was with them and their families, their parents, their wives, their husbands. We salute them, and now we must honor them by completing the mission for which they gave their lives. And every single one of the people, their loved ones said, please, sir, please finish the job, every one of them. And we are going to finish the job, and we're going to finish it very fast. We're getting very close. I want to thank our allies in the Middle East, Israel, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, the UAE, Kuwait, and Bahrain. They've been great, and we will not let them get hurt or fail in any way, shape, or form. Many Americans have been concerned to see the recent rise in gasoline prices here at home.
Strategic oil reserve, guys, we're good.
The short-term increase has been entirely the result of the Iranian regime launching deranged terror attacks against commercial oil tankers in neighboring countries that have nothing to do with the conflict. This is yet more proof that Iran can never be trusted with nuclear weapons. They will use them, and they will use them quickly. It would lead to decades of extortion, economic pain, and instability worse than we
could ever imagine.
The United States has never been better prepared economically to confront this threat. You all know that we built the strongest economy in history. We're going through it right now, the strongest in history. In 1 year, we've taken a dead and crippled country. I hate to say that, but we were a dead and crippled country after the last administration and made it the hottest country anywhere in the world by far, with no inflation, record-setting investments coming into the United States, over $18 trillion, and the highest stock market ever, with 53 all-time record highs in just 1 year. It all positioned us to get rid of a cancer that has long simmered. It's known as the nuclear Iran, and they didn't know what was coming. They've never imagined it. Remember, because of our drill baby drill program, America has plenty of gas. We have so much gas. Under my leadership, we are number one producer of oil and gas on the planet, without even discussing the millions of barrels that we're getting from Venezuela. Because of the Trump administration's policies, we produce more oil and gas than Saudi Arabia and Russia combined. Wow. Think of that. Saudi Arabia and Russia combined. And that number will soon be substantially higher than that. There's no country like us anywhere in the world, and we're in great shape for the future. The United States imports almost no oil through the Hormuz Strait, and won't be taking any in the future. We don't need it. We haven't needed it, and we don't need it. We've beaten completely decimated Iran. They are decimated, both militarily and economically and in every other way. And the countries of the world that do receive oil through the Hormuz Strait must take care of that passage. They must cherish it.
Oh,
they must
man.
grab it and cherish it. They can do it easily. We will be helpful, but they should take the lead in protecting the oil that they so desperately depend on.
Oh, no.
So to those countries that can't get fuel, many of which refuse to get involved in the decapitation of Iran, we had to do it ourselves. I have a suggestion. Number one, buy oil from the United States of America.
Jesus
we have plenty. We have
Christ.
So much. And number two, build up some delayed courage. Should have done it before. Should have done it with us, as we asked. Go to the Strait and just take it. Protect it. Use it for yourselves. Iran has been...
The U.S. literally starts a war against Iran and then tells everybody else on the planet, as gas prices go up, well, just buy more from us at high prices. Holy shit. It's like shameless.
Essentially decimated. The hard part is done, so it should be easy. And in any event, when this conflict is over, the Strait will open up naturally. It'll just open up naturally. They're going to want to be able to sell oil because that's all they have to try and rebuild. It will resume the flowing, and the gas prices will rapidly come back down. Stock prices will rapidly go back up. They haven't come down very much, frankly. They came down a little bit, but they've had some very good days over the last couple of days. We've done actually much better than I thought, but we had to take that little journey to Iran to get rid of this horrible threat. With our historic tax cuts, where people are just now talking about receiving larger refunds than they ever thought possible, they are getting so much more money than they thought. That's from the great, big, beautiful bill. Our economy is strong and improving by the day, and it will soon be roaring back like never before. It will top the levels that it was a month ago. I've made clear from the beginning of Operation Epic Fury that we will continue until our objectives are fully achieved. Thanks to the progress we've made, I can say tonight that we are on track to complete all of America's military objectives.
4 to 6 weeks?
Very shortly.
Oh, shortly.
We are going to hit them. The progress we've made, I can say tonight that we are on track to complete all of America's military objectives shortly, very shortly. We are going to hit them extremely hard over the next 2 to 3 weeks. We're going to bring them back to the Stone Ages where they belong. In the meantime, discussions are ongoing. Regime change was not our goal. We never said regime change, but regime change has occurred because of all of their original leaders' death. They're all dead. The new group is less radical and much more reasonable. Yet if during this period of time no deal is made, we have our eyes on key targets. If there is no deal, we are going to hit each and every one of their electric generating plants very hard and probably simultaneously.
Jesus
Christ.
We
have not hit their oil, even though that's the easiest target of all, because it would not give them even a small chance of survival or rebuilding. But we could hit it, and it would be gone, and there's not a thing they could do about it. They have no anti-aircraft equipment. Their radar is 100% annihilated. We are unstoppable as a military force. The nuclear sites that we obliterated with the B-2 bombers have been hit so hard that it would take months to get near the nuclear dust, and we have it under intense satellite surveillance and control. If we see them make a move, even a move for it, we'll hit them with missiles very hard again. We have all the cards. They have none. It's very important that we keep this conflict in perspective.
They have no cards. Remember that.
American involvement in World War I lasted 1 year, 7 months, and 5 days. World War II lasted for 3 years, 8 months, and 25 days. The Korean War lasted for 3 years, 1 month, and 2 days. The Vietnam War lasted for 19 years, 5 months, and 29 days. Iraq went on for 8 years, 8 months, and 28 days. We are in this military operation, so powerful, so brilliant, against one of the most powerful countries for 32 days. And the country
no big deal,
has been
guys.
Eviscerated and essentially is really no longer a threat. They were the bully of the Middle East, but they're the bully no longer. This is a true investment in your children and your grandchildren's future.
Jesus, true.
The whole world is watching, and they can't leave the power, strength, and brilliance. They just can't believe what they're seeing. They leave it to your imagination, but they can't believe what they're seeing, the brilliance of the United States military. Tonight, every American can look forward to a day when we are finally free from the wickedness of Iranian aggression and the specter of nuclear blackmail. Because of the actions we have taken, we are on the cusp of ending Iran's sinister threat to America and the world. And I'll tell you, the world is watching. And when we do, when it's all over, the United States will be safer, stronger, more prosperous, and greater than it has ever been before. May God bless the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, and may God bless the United States of America. Thank you very much, and good night.
Good night. So it was a nothing burger.
Well, I mean, no, he's saying that we're staying
there. No, he said that if they...
He's saying we're staying there until we're done, so who the fuck knows how much longer. We're not committing anything to the Strait of Hormuz to open it up.
Yeah.
We basically told Europe to kick rocks and eat shit, and if they want to open it up, they will, which they can't. They won't. I don't even know what that would even look like. And then...
It would have to be a ground invasion.
Well, no. It would be some kind of navy committed to the Strait of Hormuz, but I don't even know how possible it is to do... I don't know what ships are going to be passing through that strait. Like, it's just the risk is so high. And then, yeah, well, so I guess we have to look forward to this indefinitely.
Cool.
I was watching a video by one of that smart dude, Patrick something or whatever, and he was saying that even if you fucking open that shit up to, like, imagine that, like, Iran was just vaporized tomorrow, that you're still, like, 2 years out from even remotely being able to get back to normal. Like, it takes so long to get the wells going again that they've had to, like, cap off. It's not like, oh,
wait, really?
Yeah. You should watch, I think, Patrick Boyle, is that who it is? It's, like, a serious thing. Like, yeah. Even if it ended
tomorrow.
He's
usually pretty red on his stuff, but I thought you could adjust the oil stuff up and down, like,
no.
Pretty responsibly.
He's basically, he said that, like, even if it was solved tomorrow, you're cooked for 1 to 2 years. Like, really cooked.
Dan, do you have to go back before we do?
Go back to where?
To war? Are you, like, in the reserves or some shit?
Huh.
No, don't you? Isn't that where you go after you retire or finish your military contract?
They said 42 or 41 is the max enlistment age.
Yeah. Well, you're not that old.
I am.
Wait, how old are you again?
43.
No, you're not.
You're
shut the fuck
he's
up.
Lying.
You're he's trying to draft dodge. Get
he's
this guy.
To draw dodge,
get
man.
This guy back in. You're going back in, Dan. You need
no,
to
gear I don't
want
to go.
Gear
no,
up.
I, they don't want me.
Gear
I don't
up,
want
Dan.
Them.
Suit the
no!
fuck up, motherfucker.
No, I'm not going.
You get to choose up. Which. You get to choose which side you fight for too. Israel
yeah.
or the United States, man.
If anybody was going to go over there to die for Israel, it should be a Jew.
What?
Get over
no,
there, Dan.
I don't want to.
True. They
all
should
I know,
just draft all the Jews.
All I know how to do is cut grass. That's it. And I'm super.
Well, guess what? We got
touch.
A lot of forward operating bases that are going to need crazy maintenance while they're over there. Okay.
Yeah, but I wasn't even good at it. I was bad at that, too. I was good at nothing. They hated me, and I hated them.
Is this tinker shit any good?
And, Mr. President, no one has paid the price like you have paid the price. It Jesus almost cost you your life.
Oh. I'm crying.
You were betrayed
oh.
and arrested and falsely accused.
Whoops.
It's a familiar pattern that our Lord and Savior showed us.
He's literally
but
Jesus.
But it didn't end there for him, and it didn't end there for you. God always had a plan. On the third day, he rose, he defeated evil, he conquered death, hell, and the grave. And because he rose, we all know that we can rise. And, sir, because of his resurrection, you rose up. Because he was victorious, you were victorious. And I believe that the Lord said to tell you this. Because of his victory, you will be victorious in all you put your hand to. Amen.
Sorry, Black Queen is speaking. Hold on.
Because God is with you and God is using you to defeat evil, to restore families, to awaken the church.
Progress markers. Those are the bosses you have beaten. Areas you've cleared with that class. Ah.
To harvest the nations and to bring a worldwide revival. So I'm going to ask something. Would you all stand and just, if you're comfortable, stretch your hand towards our president?
Yes.
Jesus Christ.
And even if Reverend Graham, you'd like to lay hands on him and Pastor Robert. And just come in agreement with me. For 2 Chronicles 7:14 declares, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray,
Trump
then I will hear from heaven.
Not. He loves it.
And forgive their sins, eagle, bro. And heal their land. So today we humble ourselves and we seek you, Lord Jesus. You declared in Proverbs 14:34 that it said, the righteousness exalts a nation. So we declare righteousness over America. And that every decision that is upon President Trump's shoulders, he will make them in your righteousness. We declare Psalm 32:12 that blessed is a nation whose God is Lord. So today we declare that America is blessed. As President Trump has decided to rededicate this nation on May 17th to you, O Lord. So we invoke your name, your power, your mercy, your grace. We pray James 1:5 over him, that you will always have the wisdom of God all the days of your life. Yes. I declare Psalm 91 over you, that you will be satisfied with long life. I declared that everything you touch, you will have the favor of God. According to Luke 2:52, even as Jesus was favored with both God and man, so let it be with President Trump. And I
really, we don't get the whole, come on now.